one has ever asked me the questions that you've asked me today.
Lewis Capaldi!
Releasing new music first time in like 3 years. This time I'm shitting myself.
Why? I remember that video of you doing your, you found out your net worth.
Oh yeah.
That's 10 fucking million quid sitting about somewhere. Where the fuck is it?
No label would ever tell you that is the strategy to become successful.
You can fully just put a picture of you with a towel wrapped around your head and these stupid glasses on with your top off on a big massive poster on the tube. It's less about being like a polished fucking pop star or whatever. People see through that shit.
You are living an extraordinarily unhuman life. What is the reality?
I have really bad anxiety. It never reached a tipping point until after getting famous. I fucking hate recording albums. I despise doing music videos. I only do all that stuff because playing live is this fucking unparalleled thing that you can't compare it to anything else. So like when that was making me feel shame, if it's like, fuck, I don't know if I can do any of this shit anymore. My dad gave me a lift home from the airport one night and I was twitching like fuck, to the point where he started crying in the car. I couldn't concentrate on work I was doing because I was so convinced that I was going to die.
What is the question that no one asks you that would reveal the most untapped answer?
I think...
Without further ado, I'm Stephen Bartlett and this is The Diary of a CEO. I hope nobody's listening, but if you are, then please keep this to yourself. Lewis.
Hello.
When you look back, and I was reading about your childhood, I found it really fascinating. When you look back at those early dots that you, I think sometimes in hindsight, we can connect and go, that was a reason I became the person I am today, or that was a really significant early moment. What were those first early dots that you connect and go, that's why I ended up where I am today?
I think for me, it's probably, the first one I can remember is like, being. I remember just being on holiday in France. We used to go on these mad, like, caravan holidays in France. Me, my mum, my dad, and my two older brothers, my older sister. And there was like, I don't know, for some reason I had become obsessed with Queen. I must have been like 4 years old. But like we got like a CD in the, like one of the, you know, remember those free CD newspapers? Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
Where
yeah.
You would pull out stuff. So we got that. And it had like, We Will Rock You by Queen on it. And it had We Are The Champions as well. And I remember like, just, I became obsessed with it. And I was like listening all the way through, don't you? Where we were going, so we drove from Scotland to France, so it was like, I just remember listening to that constantly on repeat. And then being, I don't know if I'd ever showed an interest in singing prior to this or being a singer or anything like that, but I remember we were at like one of those like a band was playing and it was like a karaoke thing, like one of the family entertainment nights or whatever, and for some reason I just like asked if I could go up and sing We Will Rock You by Queen. And it was glad, and I went up and I did it. And there's a picture of me doing it. Like, I'm tiny and I've got this microphone. And it's, so I did it. And then I think I got a buzz for it or whatever. And for whatever reason, I asked if I could go back up and do another song. And I did another song. And it was like, for me, that's the first kind of memory of like, like singing and getting a buzz for like, oh, I'm up here and I'm doing this thing in front of people. It's like, again, I have no other memory of like singing prior to that. But this was like, just the first time I'd ever like got up in front of people and sang and been like, oh, this is like a wee bit of a buzz, like even at four, do you know what I mean? Which is mad to think now, but like, yeah, I don't know what sort of possessed me to get up and do it, but it was, so that must have been fucking, I don't know, like I would have been like 2000 or something maybe, that happened. But yeah, I still can't like put my finger on why I did it or what the reason was for getting up on it, but
You're 4 years old.
4 years old, yeah, yeah. So it was a strange one.
And it was like a party or something.
It was like you go on these fucking, it's kind of like these kind of package holidays that you go on with your family. They have like kids clubs and they have like entertainment nights. So it's like everyone kind of congregates in this theater kind of bit in the middle, and it's like, then they have a band or, and they have like I don't know, a fucking puppet show or some shite like that. I don't know. I can't really remember. I haven't been back since. You know I mean? I don't often hang around them. No, yeah. They didn't book me back. But yeah, so then it was like, it was just that. That was the first time we did it. And it was, I can't put my finger on why.
What were you like at that age, at that sort of under 10 age in terms of confidence? And because to say, do you know, I want to go up on stage and sing in a group in front of strangers seems like quite an abnormal thing for a child to volunteer to do.
Totally. I think prior to being like 10 and prior to like, I don't know, yeah, prior to going to high school or whatever, and that, maybe not even like that, but like when I was younger, I was definitely quite like outgoing, I'd say. Like I was quite... I remember I watched when I was like 5, I watched Austin Powers. Like I was like religiously watching Austin Powers. I don't know why my parents allowed me to do that, but like I would like go to family parties and be asked to recite like, I'm a fat bastard, don't you, Austin Powers, like the big fat guy that he plays. But I'd be asked to like recite parts of his thing, and I would do it in front of everybody and all the rest of it. It was never singing. It was just like acting the goat and like taking the piss, and yeah, like I would get up and do recite all these fat bastard bits and fucking so yeah, I was definitely like an outgoing kid, I think. I definitely liked to be, I was probably loud, and I kind of liked to be like, I guess I kind of liked people,
the feedback.
Yeah, I liked feedback. I liked people watching me do things. I liked seeing people enjoying something that I was doing.
Do you know why?
I don't know. It's a strange one, because I never put much thought into it when I was 5 or whatever, but I don't know if it's like, I don't know if maybe like making a like my parents laugh or something made me feel like, oh, that's a buzz or whatever, or like, I don't know, yeah.
I've sat here with quite a lot of comedians, you know, Jimmy Carr, Russell Kane, Russell Howard. And that's been one of the really fascinating things for me, is like trying to find out why at a young age they got a real buzz from performing and making people laugh. And actually, I think it was Jimmy Carr that said something to me. He said, instead of, you know, because there's this kind of stereotype that you do that because you're depressed and you're trying to, I don't know. But Jimmy Carr said to me, when you see that behaviour in a comedian, don't ask them if they're depressed. Ask them, which one of their parents were they trying to cheer up?
All right, wow, interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know, my parents, when I went to a therapist a couple of years ago who had said my mum's mum died when I was 3 of like cancer. Not like cancer. It was cancer. But and then a year after, her aunt like committed suicide, my mum's sister, my aunt, committed suicide. So my mum lost her mum and her sister in like the within a year of each other. So I don't know if maybe that's like, I'm quite like a hypochondriac, and I'm kind of like, I always think I'm ill or dying. And when I was younger, my mum used to talk to me, and I used to always be like, have you locked the doors? Like, even when I was like 4 or 5 or whatever. And a therapist told me that was kind of like, that might be because of like being exposed to like the fact that people are gone. Like people disappear. People aren't, like, I was aware of what death was at a young age. So I don't know if maybe that's like having seen like that sort of, like profound sadness in my mum when she's like lost her mum and lost her sister. I don't know if maybe that's...
Was it profound sadness that you saw?
Oh, for sure. Like, I mean, it's obviously, I mean, I can't imagine losing my mum at this. I mean, I'm 25. My mum would have been 34 when she lost her mum. So, yeah, for sure. Like, I have vivid memories of, like, going into my mum's room and she was crying in bed. I think this might have been when my aunt died, but her crying in bed and talking about, like, and then being, like, having to tell me, oh, like, you know, had passed away or whatever, or like I wasn't fully aware of what was going on, but I just saw her so like heartbroken and so distraught that this had happened. So I don't know if maybe that's an interesting thought of like, I don't know if maybe that's fed into it and like me doing anything I could to like either cheer them up or distract them or whatever, I don't know, but yeah, it's an interesting train of thought.
How old were you when that happened?
I was 3 when my grand died, and 3 3/4 when my aunt committed suicide. So I was young, for sure.
It's really, I don't think people realize how much kids can feel the pain of their parents. I had an incident with my sister-in-law and her and my niece, where my probably the instance that taught me this lesson, where my sister-in-law was crying, was upset about something, and I just looked down at my niece, and my niece is glued up at her, and my niece explodes in tears as well.
Yeah,
that kind of relationship we have, like of intuitively knowing if our parents are feeling something.
Totally. Of course. I think that, yeah, I think it is. People, kids do. I mean, it's a thing now where people are kind of talking about more. Kids see a lot more. I actually watched that Joe Wicks documentary a few weeks ago where he was talking about his parents' addictions and things. And he says, like, yeah, kids see so much more and are aware of so much more than we actually know. And I totally agree. Because even now, if I'm at a funeral, could be for someone I have never met in my life, but my mum knew them. If I turn around and my mum's crying, I'll start crying.
Yeah.
Like, it's like something that's like obviously learnt. Like, you see your mum crying, it's one of the worst things you can possibly see. Your mum or your dad or any of your brothers and sisters in pain or crying or like really going through something. And I think, it's something that just does, even now, sticks with you.
And Fizz, I read this study about these monkeys, these rhesus monkeys, and it showed that if the mother rhesus monkey had a phobia of spiders, then all of the babies would be scared whenever they saw a spider.
Oh, wow.
And that kind of showed you, you're talking about hypochondria there, and you're talking about like using your parents as a steer as to what is dangerous, what is sad, you know, and all those things. Do you think that you said you had like a hypochondria?
Yeah, totally.
Do you think that came from your mother's caution?
I think it's not necessarily my mother's caution. My mum's a nurse, so she's not like, she is like the least, like if I phone her and I say, "Mum, I've got a headache, I'm dizzy, I think I've got like a tumour or something," she'll be like, "Shut the fuck up, you're fine. Like, listen, take some paracetamol, go to sleep, you'll be grand. I'll see you later." My dad is a very, the older I get, the more I understand that my dad, I get all my anxieties and things from my dad. My dad's like a worrier for sure. He's a catastrophizer as well. Like, his mind goes to like
spirals.
Yeah. The other day he went he went to my brother's house, chapped from the door. My brother never answered. My brother was in the shower. And my dad had convinced himself there was a gas leak in the house. And my brother, like, an immediate jump, like no stepping ladder to that. It was chat with door, no answer, chat with door again, right, gas leak, something's wrong. Banging the door. My brother comes out and I tell him, he's like, "What the fuck are you doing? This is like mental." And my dad's, but that's like, I mean, it comes from like an amazing place, but it's something that he just has in his mind. And I think he's a hypochondriac as well. And he kind of has, I think I've learned that from him in the sense that he's a worrier in that sense. But I do think that, because I never thought about my aunt and grandmother passing away as like a big thing in my childhood. Which now when I say that out loud, it sounds mental, because when I'm like, "Oh, it wasn't a big thing or whatever," but like, so I think it's probably that, like that sort of like awareness of death and awareness that you're not around forever and your parents, like, because then immediately I'm like, "Oh, my mum's passed away, like my mum will probably," like, do you know what I mean? That's immediately in your head as a kid. So I can't remember why I got onto asking her about like locking the door when I was a kid, and she was, "Have you locked the door?" I don't understand, and I still don't remember how that became a thing. So I think I definitely get a lot of my hypochondria and my worry and my anxiety from my father, and my mother's quite calm, cool and collected. If I'm, the older I get, the more I'm realizing that, do you know what I mean?
I sat here with a guy called Jack, mate, he's called, and he talked about health anxiety and OCD, and he really opened up about it. And I, you know, people use these terms flippantly. They say, "I've got OCD," or I'm a hypochondriac. Mm-hmm. And they use them so flippantly to describe like the tiniest little, something's not neat, I've got OCD. Or, you know, you might find a lump and go, "Oh, it's," you know, jokingly say it's this. And then someone will flippantly say, "Oh, you're a hypochondriac."
Totally.
But the reality of being a hypochondriac or OCD is, as Jack taught me, is very, very different.
Mm-hmm, totally, 100%.
What is the reality?
So I think, I have really bad anxiety, like anyway, which I never really, it never reached a tipping point until after, like, getting famous. I never had a panic attack until after I was famous, or after I was a musician, or after this was like, after it got to like a height. But the hypochondria, I guess like looking back now, I'm like, oh, I was like such an anxious kid. But then, because now I understand it a lot more and I've got a therapy and I speak about it with people and I'm trying to learn a bit more about it, I kind of look back at things I did and realised that the behaviour was the result of anxiety. But that hypochondria thing was probably where it all started, and it was like, I'd be walking around school like moping and fucking like sort of like blinkered view on everything, and I was just like, couldn't concentrate on work I was doing because I was so convinced that I was going to die and that I had this fucking horrible disease and that it was going to be over and I was going to have to go to hospital. I was going to pass out or have a seizure. I've never done, none of that has ever happened to me. I've touched wood, never been in hospital for anything serious. I've never broken a bone. I've never had any major, I've never had a surgery. I've never had any major illnesses or anything like that. At school, when I was in primary school, I never missed a day off. I never had a day off. I was always, I was never ill. Secondary school, I was off ill once. Like, so it wasn't like I had cause for any of this. It was just like in my head, just thinking. And I think maybe that's a thing as well of like, I don't know if that maybe never actually being ill, I didn't know what being really ill felt like. So my mind would maybe conjure something up in that respect. But at the school, it just became, sometimes it could become like just really like, again, at the time, I didn't understand it. And the symptoms of the anxiety, like being dizzy and fucking, I used to kind of always go like, I used to take big deep breaths like that all the time. And I used to make this noise, which I still make when I go like, and it's like, I found, so basically now looking back, I realised that's all anxiety, and I actually got diagnosed with Tourette's like 2 months ago or something like that.
Really?
Yeah. Which was to me made, when they said it, I was like, oh, that kind of makes fucking sense. Because I always thought Tourette's like fucking swearing on that. I never realised it could just be like
ticks,
bodily thingies. But so I kind of, yeah, as I say, like looking back, I now realise it was all anxiety. But if I thought I had a brain tumour and I was like, and I was like worrying about it so much and getting anxious that I was dizzy, that would then feed back into the, oh, I've got a brain tumour because I'm dizzy all the time. Why else would I be dizzy? Do you know what I mean? I even got so bad a couple of years ago that I went and paid for an MRI scan, cancelled. I was meant to play Austin City Limits Festival in Austin, and I just had to cancel the trip because my anxiety about, I think there's something serious wrong with me, had got so bad that I was like, I can't get on a plane and go to Austin and be away from home. I need to go get an MRI scan, or I need to fucking really see what it's talking about. So I went and got it, and obviously there was nothing in my head. I was fine.
And no one can talk you out of those. When you're in that moment, call your mum, you call your friends, you tell people, no one can talk you out of it.
I can do it now because I've like done therapies and I've kind of been able to sort of understand my own anxiety and stuff a bit more. Like, that has made it easier for me to kind of talk myself out of these kind of situation, at least kind of holes that I can dig myself in my head. My mum's also very good at it. My dad's absolutely useless because he's fucking like, he's anxious himself. Like,
he's right, Lewis. Yeah,
exactly. He's just like fucking, he's mental. But so my mum, yeah, she's really good at, like, if I'm having a panic attack, my mum has to, like, there's nobody else that can like talk me out of it, my mum, for sure. Definitely. Like, that, by the way, my mum has had to sleep in my bed as recently as like a month ago because of how bad my anxiety got at one point. But I think that was alcohol related. I had been on a bit of a bender the couple of days before. But like, it gets to a point where I'm like, I can't imagine it not being something like life-threatening or like super serious because of how fucking, like, sometimes like things don't feel real. Someone will say something to me and I won't understand what they're saying. Like, it's fucking, it gets like proper intense. But yeah, that's kind of the hypochondria as I've got older is has lessened. It's only when I start to have a panic attack or like I start to get really anxious that I'll go, right, that's, I'm dizzy. It's probably anxiety. You're fine. And there's a voice in the back of my head that goes, but what if it isn't? What if there's something really wrong with you? What if you're about to pass out? And then in some situations, I get, my head tells me like, oh, you're about to have a panic attack. You're going to have, like, and that is enough. Like, that's enough hypochondria. Like, it's mad. So it's still something like ongoing, like that I deal with, but it's definitely getting better. I've started taking like my medication for it. I've seen a therapist more regularly. Again, the Tourette's thing was like a good sort of, and it was kind of nice to hear because I started doing this mad twitch on my shoulder. It's actually okay today, but that became so like bad that I was like, this has to be fucking something serious, like motor neuron disease, Googling all that shit. And like, again, just the wheels starting turning and all the rest of it. So that finding out the Tourette's thing was fine, was like a nice sort of like, oh, that's okay, that's cool. Because I don't mind, like, I never really think that like I have like a mental illness of any sort. I just think sometimes I get really anxious and it's fine. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's just one of those things, but I don't see it as like this big thing. I'm quite like, I'll talk to anybody about it. If I'm having a panic attack in the room, I'll be like, I'm having a panic attack, by the way. So just do with that information what you will.
And you said that on stage before.
Yeah, I've done it on stage. I had a couple of panic attacks on stage. We did an arena tour in March 2020, like right up and like just before COVID kicked off. And I don't know, it was like, obviously it was like, basically it was kind of the culmination of this album campaign that we had done for the last record, and things were great. And it was like, we played Australia and done some amazing shows in Australia in January, Europe in February. And then March was coming back, like kind of nice sort of fucking victory lap. Look what we've done. This is great. Arenas. Can't believe we're doing this in the first album. Amazing. It was the worst 2 weeks of my life. Like, it was fucking shit. I hated every minute of it. Like, if you look at videos of me on stage, I'm doing this twitch that was so bad that it was just, like, it was, I couldn't speak between songs. I had to stop songs and start them over again. I saw lots of tweets being like, one tweet in particular that was like, oh, Lewis was fully on cocaine, like fucking, there's like twitching, fucking all this shit. And then obviously I'm like, oh no, people think I'm on cocaine, that feeds into my thing, do you know what I mean? It was fucking horrible. And I think I played, the first two shows were in Glasgow, they were like, the first two arena gigs were in Glasgow. And I remember walking out into it was like a kind of big Coliseum thing at the Hydro in Glasgow. And it's like, I remember walking out into the middle of the arena, empty arena with my mum, my dad, my sister, and looking around and being like, oh fuck, this is like, it was just, I think things had got to a point where they were bigger than, like, I was seeing how big it had gotten. Like, do you know what I mean? It was the first time I'd, because the way it worked was my songs had gotten, we were kind of always playing catch up with ourselves in terms of the size of venues we were doing. So like when we could have done 2,000 cap rooms, we were doing 1,000 cap rooms, and then like so on and so forth. So it became like, it was kind of nice because I was like, oh, this is great. Like song's flying. Like that next song's done really well as well. Like we're playing these nice rooms. The crowds are mental. This is class. And I think, yeah, the arena was like, the arena shows were like, oh fuck, this is real, this is huge. There's a difference between 2,000, because that's another thing I've got a bit of an issue with, especially in the UK. It's really hard to go from 2,000 capacity rooms to 16,000 capacity rooms. It's like, there's very rarely in between. I mean, on the pilot, you can do like 10, you can do like 5 in places, but it was just like, fucking hell, this is like a big jump. And then that thing of like disappointing people really came into it, and then just like, I don't mind support. Being a support act, I always love, because if I'm shite, no one gives a fuck, because it's like, who cares? Who is that? Who is this guy? Like, do you know what I mean? We supported Sam Smith on tour, and like they were really gracious and had us on, but everyone's there to see Sam. No one's there to see me. Like, do you know what I mean? So if I go out and have a shite gig, it's like, grand, I'm fucking off. This is great. Do you know what I mean? So But when it's like people have bought a ticket to see you, it's not a festival where there's loads of other people on, they're there to see you. It just became quite, it was quite an intense.
How old were you then when you walked out with your family into that gig and you looked up at the stadium?
23 years old. It was intense. I think it's because as well, like, I just maybe, I think in my head I was like, oh, you can't. As I've got a bit, I've got really bad, like, and everybody I speak to who's done well at this, like, imposter syndrome thing where it's like, I don't deserve to be doing this. What the fuck? Like, why am I fucking up here doing this? I feel like a fucking absolute, like, I don't know, just like a fucking, like, I shouldn't be in this position. And I've always had it, and it's like, we do the self-deprecating patter, like, on fucking interviews and stuff, which I do love. It's like, take the piss, but like, the imposter syndrome stuff, I had never been more insecure and unsure of myself than after I did really well.
That's so interesting.
Do you know what I mean?
Because I've heard that before.
Yeah. Like even now, like, going back to write new music after we'd done these fucking shows, it's like, I thought I was going to go in and be like, right, I've had a couple of hits. Relax, guys. Here we go. This is going to be lovely. Easy peasy. I was fucking second guessing myself all the time. I was like, I would start writing a song and then immediately, no, that's shite. Like, just constantly, like, self sort of, like just fucking just, ah, that's shite, nah, that's shite. Like, looking at what we did before, obviously COVID happened. You have all this time to kind of, like, look back on everything you did and you go, oh, for fuck's sake, that was, like, kind of got away from us a bit there. The song, one of the songs went number one in America and I was like, there's no way I can do that again. That just seems like such a fucking, such a fucking climb and something that I'm just not capable of. It feels like someone else did it. Do you know what I mean? And now I'm like, oh, now I'm
you're lumped. Comparing yourself to that person.
Yeah. I'm like lumped. It's like we were saying before, like that thing of like, even now coming on to do like interviews and stuff, it's like, fuck, I don't know if I can do any of this shit anymore because it's been fucking ages. It's been like 3 years.
Do you know who sat here before you was Bear Grylls? Mm-hmm. And Bear Grylls said to me, he said, the more successful I've become, the lower my confidence has become. Because mm-hmm. Bear Grylls now is, he's, when you, like, if your mate eats something crazy or does something crazy, you go, who do you think you are, Bear Grylls? Mm-hmm. He's actually become synonymous with the word. Like, so his identity is this, like, extreme, you know, whatever. And he's now looking up at his own identity going, how the hell am I ever going to be Bear Grylls?
Totally,
and,
yeah.
And it was crazy to hear him say, like, his confidence is at, like, pretty much an all-time low because of his success.
Yeah.
Because he's competing with his own accomplishments, which is
totally
not an easy place to be.
No, 100%. And I totally agree with that. I feel like, as well, it's such a weird position to be in because you walk into a room, like, and it's people, like, this sounds wanky as fuck, but, like, I have to assume in some regard that people around my age have at least heard about me in passing. And I always just assume, when I go in a room, I just assume people in that room don't like me. Like, that's just my...
Don't like you.
That's my, like, default position of, like, I don't know why. I don't know why it is, but I just, like, it's just something I always have. And I always, like, if I go to a pub and, like, I'll walk in a pub, like, I'm like, oh, fuck. People probably, like, walking up to the bar or, like, if someone comes up and says hello and I'm speaking to them and I take a picture with them, I think, oh, everyone else in this pub thinks I'm a wanker. I don't know. It's like, I don't know if it's like...
When did that start?
Maybe, like, towards the end of 2019, probably. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, like, I fucking... Being famous is fun. It's great. Like, do you know what I mean?
Like, but why do you think they're not going to like you?
I don't know. It's just like, I don't know what, I just assume that they've probably seen something online, like a video I've done or an interview I've done, or they've heard the songs and they think, oh, his music's shite. Or they've seen an interview and they think, oh, I fucking hate that, can't stand him. I don't know. I just always assume that people have got this, I don't know, this view of me that they maybe don't like. I don't know. I couldn't really put my finger on it. Why? Like, I don't hate myself. Like, I think I'm all right. Like, do you know what I mean? But I think it's just, I don't know. I don't know if it's maybe that thing of, like, being, like, in the public eye, like, you're so fucking exposed to, like, all this shit. And it's like, yeah, it's just it's a bit of a, you walk into a room and you feel like, oh, fuck, this is
Do you feel like it? Because I've started doing Dragon's Den now, so the podcast was like, you know, big people knew it before, but there's this whole new demographic now. This BBC One demographic where if I'm in the airport, if someone just glances at me, I assume, oh, they're going to come over and say something or whatever. Yeah. So you kind of live with this constant paranoia. You're kind of like...
All the time.
Like, if I just keep my headphones on I don't, I look at the fucking floor. Do you get
100%, and it's like that, sort of like paranoia is like squeezed in. And don't get me wrong, I love when people come up and I love taking pictures of people, and I love speaking to people and hearing people's stories about how they love the music, or like, even I get a lot of people who go, "Oh, I think your music's shite, but I think you're funny and all that stuff," and I'll accept that as well. That's fine, cool. But
is it cool?
Yeah, I think it's fine. My music's not going to be for everybody. I'm fully aware of that. My personality is definitely not going to be for everybody. I'm fully aware of that. I think the fact that people come up, I like the fact that people feel that they can say that to me and I won't take offence.
You've kind of invited that though, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. Because that's how I am. Like, you would really, really have to say something horrible about, I don't know what you could say to me that I would take offence at. I'm very like, I don't know if it's my upbringing in Scotland or just being Scottish or whatever. Like, I don't take offence to things, really. Like, I've seen some fucking pretty ridiculous things written about me online and on Twitter and all the rest of it that really does not, like...
You say you're very self-deprecating.
Mm, yeah, of course.
Why?
I just think it's funny. I think that's a very Scottish thing, and that's a very, like, we kind of all... Well, when I grew up, everyone just took the piss out of each other. It's quite a bad thing, not a bad thing, it's gone. You never want to get ideas above your station. Like, even when I was starting out in music, I never thought we'd get to this point or that things would get to this big, because I just always thought, it's maybe a bad thing as well, because it maybe stops a lot of people from going to achieve things or trying to reach for stuff. Like, I've said before, like, if I hadn't met my manager and my label and stuff, I would still be in pubs just playing tunes at the weekend and all the rest of it. It's not like, or I'd be playing weddings and stuff like that, because I would just not assume that this was on the cards. But I think, I think as well, there's something nice in, don't get me wrong, around my friends, I'm slagging them off like nothing else, and they're doing the same to me. And it's like you kind of figure out like what your flaws are by the way the stuff your friends pick out. And I don't get me wrong, like on tour, we say some fucking horrific stuff to each other and we take the piss out of each other, and it's all fine because we love each other and it's grand. But like, I think in general, it feels better to make people laugh like at me than other people. Like, I would rather make someone laugh at me than grab somebody else and take the piss out of them before.
Is there not a harm in that? In self-deprecating? Like, because I've heard some of the things you said. You know, you said, I mean, I know they're jokes, but you said things like, women find me equally repulsive in Australia, and whenever you take a shot at yourself. And I do want it, because if one of my good friends was always self-deprecating, I would tell them to stop.
Yeah, totally.
Because I would be worried that those words might knock their own confidence. Yeah.
It's the thing, it's like, you don't talk, like, be nice to yourself. Like, that's the thing of, like, I think if you're talking, like, if you had, like, a child, would you want someone to say the things to your child that you say about yourself? I get that completely, and I understand that, but I don't like self-deprecate constantly in my private life. Do you know what I mean? I don't like...
Yeah.
It's something that has become kind of synonymous with me doing interviews and all the rest of it. And I do it a lot in my private life, but not like, it's not like a constant every sentence, like kind of how it is on interviews and things like that.
Do you think it's kind of self-defense in a way? From,
it could be, I think as well, Look, my first album's called Divinely Uninspired to a Hellish Extent, which is like kind of getting, saying my album's shite before a critic can say my album's shite. I think it's like, it's nice to take the power away from people, because it's like, oh, I fucking said it first. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I think it's quite it is good. It takes the power away from other people, I think, in that regard. So I do think there's probably something in that, but the way I see it, I don't really feel like it's dragging me down. Like, for example, the stuff I say to myself in my head when I'm hungover, that is like damaging stuff. Like, that sort of thing of, like, when you're hungover and you're like, kind of just that self-loathing and that sort of, like, that's the stuff that if I said to myself all the time, I'd be like, whoa, you need to fucking like chill out. Everything's like jovial. And it's never stuff that like I can't change. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It's not like things like that I'm like, if I'm tall myself chubby, that's not like my, I can do something about that. Like, do you know what I mean? I'm not. Do you know what I mean? So it's something like that. There is an aspect as well of like you kind of, people, you get to a point and doing interviews, like especially radio stations, that we do just say the same thing over and over again. So it's the same in that regard of like, people say it a lot, like you're very self-deprecating. It's like, well, yes, but I'm getting asked the same questions everywhere I go. So I'm just kind of like rewording a lot of this self-deprecating pattern and the rest of it. So yeah, I mean, I don't think second time around it's going to be quite I don't know how it's going to play out. That's what I'm saying about like turning it on again and all the rest of it. Like, it's just, it's going to be interesting to see like how things play out this time around. Cause it's like, yeah, I'm not just going to come out and say the same stuff.
How do you feel about the second time around? Give me the full range of emotions. So this is your second
kind of, yeah, releasing new music, first time in like 3 years.
First time was just a smash mega ultra hit.
Yeah. Some might call it that. Yeah.
Fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. So this time I'm shitting myself. But this is the problem. I think the nature of the music industry is a big problem with, I mean, it's got so much better and I've had a lot of support from everyone around me. No one forces me to do anything. No one really, we were able to, this is like almost unheard of, but like we were able to go away and make new music and bring it to the label and be like, this is the new music that we're going to put out. And they said, great, thank you. We will now do our job with this. So it's like a lot of people have like, maybe an A&R who's quite, oh no, you change this and that. We were given like, the first album and second album, free reign to kind of go do what we wanted to do. People have always checked up on us. But I think in the music industry, maybe any industry, it's like, you get a number one single and immediately it turns to, oh yeah, but can I do it again?
Yeah.
And then you do it again and then it's immediately like, ah, but how's the album doing? And it's like, how are the tickets doing? There's always something else. The goalposts always fucking changing. So it's this constant sort of like state of fuck, fuck, fuck. I need to like, right. You can't, it's like that thing of like, I mean, it's so, it's spoken about to death, but like that thing of not being able to sit back and enjoy it because you're always on the move to the next thing and on the move to the next thing. And I think that's why during lockdown, I really struggled as well because it was like, oh, the next thing, the next thing. And there is no next thing now because we're all on COVID and all this shit. And it's like, what do you do now? And then you just have all this pent up fucking.
How was that?
Exactly. It was intense for sure. Because do you know what? When we first got announced that, well, when COVID first got announced, as if it's a fucking album, but coming this summer. But I think when COVID first got like kind of, when the lockdowns first were announced, we were all fucking, I was a bit like, I was meant to go on tour to in America to support Niall Horan. Mm. But having just had the fucking horrible experience that I had over the 2 weeks, I was in a position where I was, I don't know if I can perform live anymore without having a panic attack. It was that bad. Like, every single night I had a panic attack. I was twitching. It was fucking horrible. People who I knew would be watching the gigs and they would come back after and be like, we didn't enjoy watching that gig. Like, that was really fucking hard for us to see you in that position.
Did you ever, in those moments, question what you were doing?
Yeah, for sure. But I questioned what I was doing a lot in lockdown as well. Like, honestly, that it kind of started that it's like, fuck, if this is making me feel this bad. And it was fucking so heartbreaking as well because, sorry, I keep hitting this mic, but I was so heartbroken about it because playing live is the best bit about music. Like, I fucking hate recording albums. It's stressful. It's a pain in the ass. I get into a point where I quite like it and it's kind of like fun, but it's not like why I got into it. I fucking despise doing music videos. I hate doing photo shoots. I hate getting my photo taken. I only do all that stuff. The only reason I started writing songs was because I thought, okay, if I, like people who I was watching, like bands like Green Day or fucking Arctic Monkeys, I was like, oh, they write their own songs. So if I want to play live, I have to write my own songs. The only reason I do any of this other shit or put up with any of this other shit is because playing live is this fucking unparalleled thing that you can't compare it to anything else.
Takes you back to being four at that karaoke gig, right?
Totally, 100%. And it's that same buzz every single fucking time. Like, do you know what I mean? I mean, unless you have a fucking shitty gig, then it's terrible. But and then you're depressed for like 3 weeks. But yeah, that buzz is just unbelievable. So like, when that was making me feel shite, I was a bit like, oh, well, this is fucking horrific. And I was like, I don't know how, if this is making me feel this bad, why continue to do it? And then at times making new music and stuff, I was like, when I would get really down on myself, I'd be like, fuck, is this actually worth it? The rest of it. I never actually got to a point where I was like, oh, I'm going to quit. Or like, think, I don't think it was ever something that was serious in my mind, because I've literally never done anything else. And I would be fucking useless at anything else. I'm a lazy cunt. Like, seriously. And I know that sounds like I'm being self-deprecating. I'm just aware of that as a genuine flaw that I'm trying to take the steps to correct. I'm so bad for just like, see, like just sitting on TikTok and fucking scrolling through it and that. And I think as well, getting to the position I got in with the first album, I was like, fuck, now I can like really fucking be lazy. Like, now I can turn this shit fucking right up. It was wild. So like, at points I was just like, fuck, did I just do this and that? But I think, for the most part, I was never seriously considering like stopping, like completely. But it was definitely something that, and my mum and dad had raised it to me, my family and friends. It's like, if this is making you feel that bad, especially when my Tourette's thing was really bad and we never knew what it was. My dad gave me a lift home from the airport one night after I'd been in London for a week, and I was twitching like fuck, to the point where he started crying in the car, because he was like, this is like, again, we never knew it was Tourette's at this point. He was like, this is fucking like, so like, he thought I was having like a seizure the next day in the car and the rest of it. It was mad. So like, they were obviously concerned, and they're like, why, like, just stop, don't do this if it's making you feel this shit. You never had any of this anxiety or anything before this all took off. But then again, when I went to therapy, I was like, oh, I actually did, but this kind of just tipped it over the edge, maybe, where it became like panic attacks and stuff like that. The live thing was really a big thing. We went and played the Grand Prix in Abu Dhabi in December of last year. Just like a set, and I was really worried about that. And then we went on stage, and I never had any of those issues. Like, I didn't twitch, I didn't have a panic attack, whatever. And I came off and I was in the toilet, and I was like, I could have fucking burst into tears, because I was like, oh, thank fuck, I can actually do this still and not be fucking twitching and not be fucking terrified and not all this shit. Do you know what I mean? So that was like a big thing. But yeah, over lockdown and stuff, I definitely thought, initially when it happened, it was such a relief, because I was like, oh, thank fuck, I don't have to go away and do this tour with Niall and then go and do festivals. Because it was like, it kind of gave me a moment to kind of address it. And I know now, saying that, obviously, no, COVID did and all the stuff that happened and people lost jobs and all the rest of it, that feels like a selfish thing to say. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know how much longer I could have kept up having a panic attack every single fucking night on stage. And just like, because it was suffering for sure. And it, yeah, it just wasn't fun. But again, it was like, I would come off stage and I'd be absolutely, and then I'd be like, oh, I'm not having this panic attack. I got to a point where I was having panic attacks because I was anticipating having a panic attack. Yeah, so much. Man. Do you know what I mean? So when you get into that cycle, I think you're in real trouble, because it's like, if you go looking for something, you're going to fucking find it. Do you know what I mean?
You talk about how therapy helped. That's really inspiring to hear, because a lot of the time, honestly, when I sit here with people who are in that phase of their life, or have been through that, they didn't seek out help until much, much later in life, until, you know, much, much later after their career.
Yep.
What value, and it's also, I have to say, it's so important and nice to hear your honesty about that, because I think I think therapy is something that we should probably all consider if we have the means to do it, because it's sometimes not like whack-a-mole of seeing a symptom, but a preventative measure as well.
100%. You can't wait until things are at their worst to do something about it. It has to be something that you continue to work at. Like, do you know what I mean? It's just, I think people wait until it's like fucking like the worst, rock bottom. If you take the steps prior to rock bottom, you might not have to reach that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. How has it helped you? And what has it taught you? Because, you know,
I've tried a few different therapists, and that's the thing as well now. It's like, you kind of go to like different people and you kind of work out. I think a lot of people might go to a therapist and go, oh, that doesn't work for me. But you have to kind of find the
like
person.
Dating.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So you have to find the person who's right for you. And I'm still like, I've just started with a new one. Like, I'm still like trying to find the right person. But like, I think It's just, for me, it was all about like understand, like the first one I did was like CBT.
Yeah, yeah.
Therapy for my anxiety. And I was like, it was just about understanding what anxiety is and why I'm having these and what, like looking out for triggers and things like that. It was very much about, because at the start when it's not, when you just haven't panic attacks, you're like, oh, what the fuck is going on? This is mental. Mm. Like, why am I feeling this? And then every sort of feeling you get when you have a panic attack spurs it on even more and it becomes this big fucking massive thing. And I think when I went to CBT therapy and she was like, have you felt like this? 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 And I was like, oh yeah, all that shit. And she's like, oh, that's anxiety. And then I remember I used to, this passing out and seizure thing became a big thing as well when I was having panic attacks. And she was like, right, well, what happens if you go to, if you have a seizure? And I goes, I don't know, I probably go to a hospital. And she goes, all right, so you're in hospital. What's the best place for you to be if you've had a seizure? And she was like, I was like, oh, probably hospital. And she was like, right, cool. So what happens if you pass out? I goes, oh, I'll probably wake up and I don't know, I'll probably go to hospital. And she's like, oh, no, it was the best place for you to be. So it's like, that's like fucking thing. Simple. I'm just like really talking it out. And then I never knew what catastrophizing was, where it was like that sort of like snowball effect of
downward spiral.
Yeah, yeah. This thing happens, then this thing happens. So that was a big thing. And yeah, so just that. And then the second therapist went, it was the person who mentioned the thing about my mum's mum and being exposed to like death that young. Mm. And being around death that young and kind of just that being a thing with my hypochondria and all the rest of it. And I just think it's so funny, like when they make you like speak out, like think, like, so like me saying, her saying, so what happens if you have a seizure? And I go, oh, I'll go to the hospital. And she goes, well, where would the best place be? Like, do you know what I mean? It's like,
so simple.
But it's like so simple, but actually them making you say it, you go, oh, it makes so much fucking sense. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's been a big help. And again, it's like not something that I feel, it's not something I ever saw myself doing, going to therapy and all the rest of it, but it definitely fucking makes me feel great. Like afterwards, you just feel like a fucking weight's been lifted off your shoulders. And if you have the means to do it, it's something that I would recommend massively. I think, it has helped me. Like it will continue. It continues to help me. It's that thing of like, it's like anything. It's like you go to the gym to stay. Well, I don't. But you go to the gym to stay fit. Like for me, like going to therapy is like, can I go to the gym to kind of like help my mind just fucking
exactly
work through things and
having the awareness to know that you are living an extraordinarily unhuman life. And I say unhuman because we're not meant to have feedback at that scale. Yeah. We're not meant to go into arenas. I mean, if we're probably from our hard wiring, we're probably meant to be in groups of 10.
Yeah, totally.
Of people we know and love, you know, small communities, not going to arenas with tens of thousands of people.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. So, and I think that's the thing as well, is like understanding that this experience that you've been through the word traumatic is a fucking big word, but it is traumatic. It's a massive switch. Like I was fucking playing pubs at weekends to earn money and fucking, I was at college doing music and the only reason I did it was because I was lying on my bed one day and my dad says, what are you doing after the summer? And I goes, oh, I don't know yet. I was just going to play gigs. And he was like, oh, you fuck, fucking work at something. So I phoned my friend Adam and was like, what course are you doing? Oh, I'm doing this music course. Went and done that. So I was just fucking like pottering around and then shit just kicked off. Do you know what I mean?
Was your hope for life then? If we go back, because we did skip past that part, if I'd asked you at 16 years old what you want to be when you're older, what would the answer have been?
I've always just wanted to make enough money doing music so that I didn't have to get a real job. Like anything, like if I made like, I don't know, fucking £500 a month, I would have been fucking buzzing. Like I would have been so happy with that. The first day I met my manager, he said to me, what would be your fucking like ideal fucking situation? And there was this artist called Lewis Watson at the time who at the time was playing like King Tut's size venues in Glasgow. So that's like 350 people. And I was a huge fan of his. And I was like, oh, what I get like Lewis Watson would be like my goal. Like that kind of playing King Tut's size venues up and down the UK would be my absolute goal. And my manager was like, I think you could be doing arenas. This is the first day I met him. I think you could be doing arenas. And I was like, shut the fuck up. Like, tongue pish, whatever. And then fucking cut to 3 years later, playing arenas. It's like, it's just madness. So it's like, Yeah, I just wanted to be making enough money playing music that it wasn't, that I didn't have to get a, for want of a better word, real job. Because this is like, and this is the thing as well with this, with music as well. This is a fucking, one of the easiest jobs in the world. This is a really easy job. The actual job part of it. It's the famous side of things that's like, that causes the anxiety and stuff like that. The actual job's a fucking breeze. One of my best pals is a gravedigger. Like, do you know what I mean? That's a fucking hard job. This is a piece of piss. Like, this is great. But it's that, it's the kind of the pressure you put on yourself, the fame and stuff like that. That's like a, and I fucking hate being on being like, oh, fame, man, it's really tough. But, because again, it's fucking class and loads of respect. But yeah, so I think it's, for me, it was never, I never thought we would get to this point. Like, I never, even when I got signed, I didn't think it was going to last. And I've always been told, like, getting signed means nothing, really. Because it does kind of, I mean, it's a nice little tick, but it doesn't mean anything. So more people get dropped than fucking do fucking become success stories. So it's always been, like, stuff that I've always just been glass half empty and been like, this probably isn't going to work out, but I'm going to fucking try and really give it a go, but it probably won't work out. So I don't like to get too fucking aspirational. And I wouldn't say I'm necessarily an ambitious person. I do think there's people around me who are ambitious and who we have the same like lofty dreams, and they maybe see something in me that, again, this is something that I cannot be more thankful for like labels and agents and PRs and my manager and my family and friends and stuff. They've obviously saw something and thought, for some reason, that we could get to a point. But personally, I just feel like, I'm just happy to play music and specifically play live. So if this just can continue to that, I can do that. I kind of like big crowds now, so it'd be nice if they could stay big for at least 2 years or whatever. But if I can play live music, yeah, I'll show up and play someone you loved at any old shite for the next 20 years. Do you know what I mean? I don't give a fuck. I'll do that, man. Do you know what I mean? Because it's a buzz. But yeah, I don't know. I just think I've always been that, oh, this is probably the end of the road here. This is probably as big as it's going to get. And it's just like when we started doing well in terms of like selling tickets for gigs and stuff, I never ever saw myself as someone who was going to have a top 40 single. So this is after selling out tours on Estate, I just thought, oh, we could maybe squeeze a top 10 album. That was like my big thing. I was like, if we get a top 10 album, I'll be fucking happy. And then it just fucking took on a life of its own.
One of the things that I was really inspired by, and which we've kind of skipped over again, is this, how many years of like practice and repetition you put in before you got discovered, like playing in pubs at like 11 years old and sneaking in and hiding in the toilets.
Yeah.
How important in hindsight was that practice?
Like invaluable. Like it's so fucking like I wouldn't be doing this if I hadn't been for that. But that's the thing. It's like the love of doing it. It didn't feel like to me like a chore, like a fucking, and because I wasn't aiming for anything, it felt like, oh, this is the buzz. This is the goal. Like,
we're there.
Yeah, we've done it. Me, when I got on stage when I was 11 hiding in toilets, when I got on stage, I was like, fuck, I've made it. This is good. Like, do you know what I mean? The fact that I didn't kicked out the pub, didn't get kicked out the pub that time, that was fucking grand. That was all I was after. That was the goal. Just play gigs. That's class. Most of my memories are like going out and getting hammered and underage drinking, which you obviously shouldn't do or whatever. But it's like, are all related to me. We put gigs on and we invited all our friends to these gigs and like we went and hired pubs that we knew served people who were like 16 and all that. Like we did, that was just, it's so, my life has been so ingrained in like doing like music, but it never ever felt like, even now it doesn't feel like I'm working hard. Nothing feels like I'm working hard. Like it's getting to like the number one record at the time didn't feel like I was doing much. I just felt like I was, because I fucking loved doing it, I didn't feel like I was working really, really hard. Again, I think it might be something to do with the fact that my brothers are like electricians and my dad's a fishmonger, mum's a nurse, and I know what, I can see like a proper day's graft compared to fanning about all day and niddling on a guitar and the rest of it. But like, I just never saw it as like fucking, oh, I'm really in the pits here and I'm fucking like, I just didn't feel like I was working hard. And that goes back to like being in those pubs and being in those like shite bars when Neil was listening to you, or playing in a restaurant, even when I was thinking, fuck, if I was eating my dinner, I wouldn't want to hear me fucking singing. Like that shit was like, that, and I think that's a lot to do with like you have to develop a thick skin playing in a pub because someone will shout your fucking shit at you non-stop
when you're 11.
Maybe not when you're 11, but when I started hitting puberty and the cute factor went away, it was like things got dicey for a bit, for sure. Things were an issue, but yeah, I think that's anytime I say I meet people like young guys or girls or fucking whoever that wants to be a musician and it's like, what did you do or whatever, it's just play gigs, just immediately go out and play a gig. Don't focus on, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm going to look this way and I'm going to this is how we're going to perform on stage, and it's just like, just go do it, just go play gigs. Don't worry about releasing, you don't have to release music. I never released a song, I never did like an official release, the first song I ever released was Bruises, which was on my album. That's the first song I ever put out, I went in and recorded and did some demos before, but that was the first song I ever properly recorded, because I'd been writing songs for fucking, at that point I would have been 20 when that came out, so 10 years I'd been writing songs for. I mean 12, because I started writing songs when I was 9, so 12 years I've been writing songs for. I got to a point where I was just like, but it was never in my head about releasing music, because I was like, oh, I just want to play live. Like, it was just this thing that I just kept doing in tandem with playing live. So for me, it's just like, that's whatever I say to people, just go do it and just go fucking get the experience. I remember going to college when we were 18, and all these people who were really talented musicians and singers and fucking, like, they'd never played a live gig. And I was so surprised by it, because they were fucking much more like technically gifted and all the rest of it, and better singers and all that shit than me. But the fact that we had played live so much, me and my friend Adam, who was a guitar player, and Paige, who was my ex girlfriend, who is Love Island winner 2020. But she was the same. She'd done loads of gigs. Adam had done loads of gigs. I'd done loads of gigs. Like, we all drove to thingy together, and it was like, that sort of experience and gigging that we all had became like, it was just so, it was so apparent, like that sort of like kind of disparity. And not, again, these people are much better musicians and like singers and everything than I was, but like when you got on stage, it was like there was a marked difference, I think, just because it was like you had that comfortability of being up there and doing it. And like, I think my voice is, I sound the way I sound because of playing in pubs. Like, that sort of like loud fucking, because I had to fucking sing above the noise of people talking pish and like drinking and all the rest of it. And like, I think, yeah, it's, if I hadn't done that, looking back now, I'm like, oh, that was the kind of game changer. Like,
this is not an easy question for someone that's self-deprecating. Uh-huh. But when you look back in hindsight, as you said there, and you go, do you know, because we all do it, we go, what was the reason why I was, because you've been wildly, wildly fucking successful. Mm-hmm. I mean, nice. I probably don't have the right words to describe just how big your records got. And I'm a huge fan of yours. No, you have a music chat, and I really am. I like, you know, in the same way, I'm a big fan of Adele. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of Ed Sheeran. Your records reached that level.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
In hindsight, so you say, okay, doing those pub gigs mm-hmm. and the repetitions there, mm-hmm. but what else?
I think
no self-deprecation allowed. No, totally. Because I'm a fucking.
Although I do think that was a big thing in it. For sure. I think I remember when I first started using like social media to do for music. It was the 1975 were kind of the main band, and everyone was like, "You have to be mysterious, and you have to be sort of like." You know, they were doing like the big gaps between the letters and all the rest of it, and it was very like black and white, really cool. And I remember if you look, I mean, it's all probably archived now, but if you look way back at some of things, I'm like trying to do that. And then after that kind of faded out, but that was everybody. Everybody was going into
like, cool
meetings, and it was like, oh, you had to be like, kind of mysterious, cool, like black and white, like da-da-da, whatever. And then we then went on to just, I was just kind of using it to be like, oh, I'm doing this today. Because I had actually stopped using all social media when I was 16. I didn't have Instagram, I didn't have Facebook, I didn't have any of that shit, because I was just like, I thought I was being cool and edgy by being off grid or whatever, but I was actually just a cunt. But then I just started using it like, oh, playing fucking Dot to Dot Festival in Bristol today or whatever. And then it wasn't until like, I thought that we had reached our peak in terms of like music and all the rest of it. Like the first EP I released did really well. And then the kind of, the releases in between, we did a song called Rush. These are songs that I still love. A song called Rush and a song called Tough. Tough, we thought was like the single. We thought this is the one that's going to fucking, if anyone was going to like blow up, that's that one. It did fuck all. It did absolutely fuck all. And I think at that point, we were like, okay, this has kind of reached this peak. We haven't reached the heights of Bruises, because Bruises kind of blew up online. I'm Reese Wright, Heights of Bruises, and that's going to be a song and whatever, blah, blah, blah. So then I just like didn't give a fuck on Instagram, and I was just like, just doing stuff that I thought me and my pals would laugh at, and fucking just talking absolute fucking shit and just genuinely like being myself on Instagram, really, which was taking the piss out of things and taking the piss out of being famous. I remember that the first one that I remember was coming back from an American tour. We had played like places in, you know, the kind of nice shows in America, and there was this big spread in the and like the Sun or some other shiny newspaper or whatever, I don't know, but like some other newspaper. So this big spread, and it said like Lewis Capaldi, no hiding place now. And when I had been in that and on the American tour, this girl in Philadelphia had given me these stupid fucking glasses, like these stupid fucking daft cat eye glasses. And I had them on me, and I was like, I don't know if it was jet lag or just being exhausted thingy, but I started filming myself and being like, yeah, I'm fucking so famous now, by the way. It's unbelievable. That's me. No hiding place now. Please fucking stop. Just talking pish, like absolute pish. Put the glasses on. I was like, this is me now. Fucking like it or lump it. Fuck you. It's like all the rest of it, right? Just, again, just inane shite, not thinking about it, like taking the piss. And then people just really reacted to it. Again, it wasn't something that I was then like, and no one was like, oh, we have to, this is a thing now. We just kind of left it and just kept, the more and more I was just got comfortable just talking to a fucking phone and taking the piss and realising, do you know what, social media is actually a piss take. Like, just don't use it for anything serious. Just have a laugh. I think that was like the big thing on that, when it was like, oh, kind of found my feet and I found my voice. And I just started taking the piss out of things and just realising, oh, you can actually just, you can fully just put a picture of you with a towel wrapped around your head and these stupid glasses on with your top off. You can put that on a big massive poster on the tube.
Scottish Beyonce.
Yeah, like all that shit. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, why not do that? Like you don't have to look good on it or cool on it or whatever. You just do a fucking stupid thing. We did that whole Christmas thingy where it was just a close-up picture of my face less and it just says Merry Christmas from Lewis Capaldi. There was no, we weren't promoting anything and anything like that. It was all on the tube.
No label would ever tell you that is the strategy to become successful. And yet, for many people, that'll actually be, well, for some people, that'll be how they discovered you. I remember that video of you doing you found out your net worth.
Oh, yeah, 200 quid. Yeah, yeah, fuck me, man.
No,
I was going to say, it was skimp.
They said you had 10 million and you're in your like mum's bedroom I got fucking New York.
But that was the thing. And like shit like that was just like taking the piss. And
no one would ever tell you to do that.
Never.
As a marketing strategy.
But this is a thing that now that someone was like, we started to see other, mostly male artists doing it.
Taking the piss and doing
very close things to it and not to be like, oh, you fucking called me, because it's like, whatever, it's people taking the piss and trying to do your thing, try whatever you can. I get how hard it is, fucking let's do it. And I remember seeing a tweet, somebody saying a few years ago, labels were telling people to be like the 1975, and now you go into meetings, people are telling people to be like Lewis Capaldi. I can't remember who did it, but I could probably find it. But like, I remember reading that and being like, is it? Like, because obviously I'm just doing whatever. And I'm like, is that a thing? And then like, I just started seeing it from more and more people. And then I was like, oh, this is fucking great. Like, cool. Like, we're all just being ourselves. This is great. But then you see some people doing it and that's not their personality and you can kind of see
it's
it.
It's fake. You can't fake it either.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's the thing. And I don't know. And now I'm not really sure what it would be. But then like someone like that you look at it now and it's like people who are themselves, like Doja Cat and Lizzo are two people who just are themselves and people love them for it.
There's a name I'm forgetting. Youngblood. No, an artist in America who did that song about riding a horse.
Oh, Lil Nas.
Yeah, exactly.
That's our thing. And now, obviously, he's doing so much for like LGBT plus representation, especially in like hip hop and all the rest of it. It's amazing. And I think, yeah, people who are, that's the thing now, you're seeing people who are themselves. It's less about being like a polished fucking pop star or whatever. People, because I think people now see through that shit. Like, people see, like...
Well, you're way more relatable than some perfect...
Mm, totally.
Beautiful, like some, like one of, like a David Beckham model with like six pack abs who is faultless and just is PR trained.
Totally, yeah.
I can't relate to that.
Yeah, of course. But then the what's funny then is it becomes such a part, like it becomes a point where that turns and people start going, oh, well, that's just, I remember there being a story and like this, I think it, one of the newspapers got in touch saying, oh, there's this story that Lewis has a comedy writer. Is that true? I took comedy lessons and I'm like, if I took comedy lessons, I think I'd be coming up with better shit than fuck, I'm fat and I'm like fatter than that. Do you know what I mean? I think I'd be able to fucking, I'd have better fucking material. Do you know what I mean? But,
not a bad idea.
Totally, yeah, exactly. Get me somebody on the phone. Get me James Acaster on the phone or something like that. But like, it was like, so then that becomes like that, then turns and it's like people are like, oh, he's trying too hard now. And you're like, I'm just doing the fucking same thing I was the last, like, do you know what I mean? For the last 10 years. But I think that people do, like when you can see someone's not being themselves, like when we were doing that and there was other people doing the same shit as us, it was like, I can see that's not you. And that was like, not them. That's probably a label that's been like, this is working for that cunt.
Yeah.
Do this. Like, do you know what I mean?
There's a juxtaposition with you though, because of the music you make. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest. So I heard your music first, loved your music, all that stuff. Then I'm on Twitter one day and I see this guy talking about his net worth and sitting in his like mum's bedroom being like, where the fuck is this money? Don't tell the tax man. And I'm thinking, that's the guy I heard? Because this guy is a comedian and he's not serious at all. Uh-huh. And then this guy in the music is deep, profound, and serious, and emotional.
Yeah.
It felt like two different people. So that's actually what, made it even more, like, shocking, but cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
And surprising.
100%. And I think a lot of people had that. I never noticed that as, like, a thing. Like, I never like, saw that as a thing until people started pointing it out. Mm. It's like, do you know you're not like your songs at all? And like, because I never really thought about it. Do you know what I mean? I'd always just fucking made tunes and then was who I was. Do you know what I mean? But it's easier to write about sad things, I guess. Like, it's hard to write about, like...
Has it always been easy to write about sad things? I remember reading about this moment when someone turned to you and said, how's your life going, when you were, like, 18, 19? And that changed everything for you.
Yeah, so up until then, I was writing songs and I'd learned how to, like, craft a song. But I wasn't, like, writing anything with any, like, fucking, like, meaning or, like, it was all kind of making up stories or whatever, or just, like, they weren't really about anything. And then you come in and you go into like co-writing sessions in London. I think I might have been 17 on my first one. And you go in and someone goes, oh, it's actually with a guy called Ollie Green, who I still see now and then on the list. He's a great writer, a great producer. And you go, like, so what's going on in your life, man? Like, how you doing? Like, what do I write about? And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking? Like, who are you? Like, I've just met you and you're asking me like how I'm doing and what's going on in my life. Like, it was almost like, I was like aggressive the way I was saying it. I was like standoffish, like, who the fuck are you? Like, I just remember thinking that, and then over time that becomes, you realise that's like the people want that, like, talk about that, and it's like that's what makes great songs, is like if you have these if you have these real stories behind them and these real emotions behind them. And that's not to say you can't write a great song and it's just gobbledygook. Like, fucking, I remember years and years ago remember that Robbie Williams song, Hey Ho, Here She Goes, You're a Little That? Great tune, right? But I remember him in an interview being like, oh, it doesn't mean anything. It's just all like cool and thingy. And it's a great song. I fucking love that song. But like, it was like, when it came to writing my songs, I found that that was like, oh, this is the thing I've kind of been missing. Is like, it's weird that it took writing with someone else to bring out more of myself and the tunes.
Are you in touch with your emotions?
I think so. Like, I think it's really important to feel how you're feeling. So, meaning like, if I wake up one day and I feel sad, I think it's important, like, there's a reason I'm sad and I should sit with it and feel it, rather than like, put it off or like, not kind of explore it. I think it is quite important to like, try your best to fucking just like, not trying to put off being fucking sad just leads to, like, for me, a big fucking hole where you're going to like really, really, you're going to just go off a cliff at one point. You can't keep putting it off or like going out and boozing instead of fucking dealing with stuff or whatever. Same with being happy. If you're happy, fucking great, feel it. I always fucking like get like really melancholic after, especially like, so I just did like my first show in years with my band over the weekend in Denmark, and then coming back home Sunday, kind of Saturday afternoon, Sunday, and I was just in my empty flat and I was like, fuck, I feel like shit. I feel really sad now because I've just had this amazing fucking like...
Oh, like the come down.
High, and like the come down was just like thinking, but I thought it's important to like sit with that and enjoy it and kind of like, not dissect it as such, but just like kind of let it sort of take you. Obviously, don't let it run away with you, but just kind of like deal with it.
Don't deny it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Don't be like, nah, I'm grand. I mean, that's like, see, now if I'm anxious, I'll feel anxious and be like, okay, I'm feeling anxious. It's fine. I wonder why I'm feeling this. Could be this, could be this, could be this. I know a lot of people who journal and write down, like, I'm feeling anxious because of this. What can I control? What can I not? All the rest of it. And I think, yeah, I try and sit with things. I do think since I've been famous, there's stuff that I'm like less maybe in touch with. Like I've been like relationships, I feel like I've become quite a closed off person. Not in like with my parents or anything else, but like if I'm starting a new relationship or trying to start a relationship, I can be quite...
A romantic relationship.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can be quite like, I don't know, shut off.
Like a shield, is that?
Yeah, 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 for sure. And I guess that's just a response to, you know, everything that's happened, but it's definitely like a...
So do you mean like when, if you meet someone new, say it's a romantic partner or if it's new people, you can kind of keep a wall up because you're...
Yeah, and I feel like I can have... It's kind of like, I feel like I can give, it's maybe more friendship, but I can give people the impression that I'm like giving them everything. But really I know like I'm fucking
defending
certain things.
Like what?
I don't know. Just like my own sort of like, maybe like insecurities about things, my own worries about things.
Because you think if you share that then...
It's just quite a vulnerable position to be in. And then it's like, you don't really know.
You don't want to give that straight away.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Because you don't know how they'll react to it.
Totally, 100%. And it's like you don't really want to, I don't know, you just, yeah, you're kind of careful about who you share that with and who you spend your time with in general. But like, it's easier sometimes to just not give that away to anybody.
To give them the public image first. Yeah, and then maybe totally.
Because that's the thing now as well, everyone has a perception of who you are. And like, even if I'm on dating apps or whatever, it's kind of weirdly one-sided when I'm asking them a bunch of shit because it's like,
they can Google.
Yeah, they know loads of things and they've either seen an interview or fucking heard on the radio or... And it's like, this is one of the things, I think I'm quite open in interviews and stuff like that, but I do think there's still a lot of things that people don't know about me. Like, there's certain questions I won't get asked.
You are always one decision away from taking your business to the next level. And a decision that's helped me to transform my business is moving over to NetSuite, who I'm excited to say are a sponsor of this podcast. If you don't know already, NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. It's reduced IT costs because it lives in the cloud, so you can access it from anywhere. And the cost of managing and running multiple systems, because it's in one unified business management suite. My team and I don't have to worry about tasks being manual and clunky, and it means that I can be more efficient and to focus on more important things like bringing you the best episodes and guests on this show. So I become one of the 37,000 companies that have already made the move over to NetSuite. NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks, so head to netsuite.com/Bartlett for a free product tour. Back to the episode. I've always wanted to ask someone this question. I'm not sure I've ever asked it, but I sat one day with myself and I thought, what's the question, as someone that's always doing interviews, always talking, what's the question someone should ask me? What's the best question they should ask me? Because I'd love to ask that question to someone else one day. And the best question I could come up with is, Steve, if I was asking it to myself, Steve, what is the question that no one asks you that they should be asking you that would reveal the most interesting, untapped answer? Now, I'm going to ask you that question and then I'll answer it myself as well, which I've never done before.
Okay. I don't know.
Like, what's the question that you think, do you know, if he'd asked me that, he fucking would have found out something that...
Oh, I don't know. Fuck. Maybe, like, things like what makes you happy. Like, genuinely what makes you happy. Because I can think about loads of things that make me sad, but I'm quite hard at, like... Music became a hobby that became a job. And now I, like, find in my life there's a lot of gaps in terms of, like, what I can do to, like, make myself, like... Other than fucking, I'm abstaining from alcohol at the minute. I'm not like fucking thinking, but like I've been off it for like 3-4 weeks or whatever. Just because we're busy doing all this shit, so I want to be thinking. And it's like, other than like, and again, this is part of where I grew up, other than like going out the weekend and getting pissed, it's like, what do you do, or like playing shows, what do you do that actually makes you happy? And I think a lot, I kind of don't know. Do you know what I mean? Other than like my music and
Liam
my...
Liam said that to me.
Liam said that to me. Yeah, it's a very strange position to be in. And it's like, I don't know where I would start to try and find something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Is that in part because your success took your
hobby,
your passion
away? Yeah, exactly. It takes your passion away because it kind of...
Turns it into...
It's monetized and it's... Yeah, it's responsibility, it's fucking...
Pressure,
it's... your band and crew who have got kids and stuff like that you feel kind of responsible for in a way, and then it's like the pressures of fucking trying not to say the wrong thing, especially in fucking these times that we're in, trying not to say the wrong thing all the time and fucking, trying not to, like... You don't want to upset anybody, so try not to upset anybody, and then also the pressure of... Fuck, that first album did well. What's this next album going to do? Like, this sort of uncertainty. I think a lot of people as well think just because the first album's done well, the second album's going to do great. And it's just not, this is not the case. You're only as good as your next song, I think.
One of the things that I think it's important for you to know is that is not a Lewis Capaldi thing. Mm-hmm. That is a human thing. Totally. And I remember reading one day about a study, which I actually wrote about my book, where they got people to do a task, right? A game that they enjoyed doing.
Totally.
And they measured their success, performance, and all those kind of things, happiness. And then they got them to do the exact same task, but they paid them to do it.
Okay.
And their motivation and happiness dropped. Wow. And it's so paradoxical. You don't think, well, if you pay me to do something that I love, my joy of doing it will drop.
That makes absolutely
no sense. But you're right. It shifts from being passion as the key incentive and motivator to money or responsibility. And it's even something I think about with this podcast, because I started it because I love it. I love having these conversations and no one's fucking listening.
Yeah, totally.
Knowing all of this and about how motivation, money, I just want to keep fighting for the bit that I love and doing it my way and not allowing, you're good at this because I know you cancelled some shows when you just needed some time. It's just taking some fucking time when I need it and saying no.
Totally. And I think that's the thing as well. It's like that we're saying about stopping before... you are stopped.
You get drunk.
Do you know what I mean? It's like stopping when you have the... It's you who's made it rather than, oh, you physically can't do this just now because you're in such a bad way. But what was the question that you'd want to ask to learn?
Oh, fuck. I thought I got that. You remembered.
Yeah, come on.
I don't think people ask me... So it would be around how I've dealt with the shift in my life from going from being like... someone that the newspapers didn't write about to being, getting emails from the big newspaper saying, is this story true about your past or your life? And like in those moments, it's really fucked me. Like so I've had just this, like now the media seem to care about my life. And sometimes they say things which aren't true. And I had thousands of employees. So they went back through all of my employees. And remember this one article where they like found like three of them, which is like 0.01% of my employees. And I'd never met these three people. And those three people had a bad experience. They wrote a story about it. Not a bad experience with me, but a bad experience with someone in my business. And that like crippled me for like many days. I couldn't think about anything else. And that is probably my first experience with something that I would call anxiety, just like feeling like nervous for like days on end.
Yeah, totally. And it's out of your control as well.
Even with all my experience doing this podcast and speaking to hundreds and thousands, hundreds of successful people about anxiety and all those things and how you deal with it, you would think I would be an expert.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
no fucking. No, I'm not. And I still don't know. I still don't know how to. If I get into one of those moments, I never got into it before. It was only public attention that did it to me.
Yeah, totally. I mean,
business pressure never. It was public attention in like, I don't even say I'm famous, but quote unquote, like being in the public spotlight.
Totally.
That made me go, this is a new feeling.
Yeah. Because you can't control other people's perception of you. You can't control how you are perceived by the wider public. People will make, like, there is, I remember I did the Brit Awards to just announce an award the other week, like last year or something. I wasn't there performing it. I went on and I was like, oh, fucking, I can't remember what I said. I think I went, the crowd was like cheering and all that. And I went, shut up. Very like jovial, no one was offended. You go online and there's like comments like, he's so disrespectful, because it was NHS workers in the fucking audience.
Fucking hell,
they're like, everyone was like howling and arrested. Yeah. But he's so that's so disrespectful. Blah, blah. My mum works for the NHS, by the way, right? I've said much worse to my mum than shut up. But yeah, it's that thing. It's that I totally can empathise with that situation, because it is just fucking like, you got into doing this because you love doing this, and then and your business because you love doing your business, and it's that you're not trained, and no one's trained.
Humans aren't meant to have fucking millions of people. I'm going to come back to something you said earlier, because we glazed past that, and my brain has just gone, go back to that.
Sure.
You're on Tinder.
Oh, yeah.
you're on dating apps.
I've just been kicked off of Tinder.
Why?
Because I think people think I'm...
They've reported you.
Fake, yeah. So I've been kicked off of Bumble, Tinder, Hinge, and Hinge is the one I love Tinder, right? Tinder's great. But Hinge is one I really want to get on, because I feel like that's now like mid-20s, like that's what people are on. I'm on a bunch of them. Don't worry about that. But then, and then I got on this one. Someone the other day told me I got on this thing called Field. And I was like, oh, cool, there's another fucking dating app, whatever. And I go on it and it's like so sexual. It's unbelievable. Like it's all about like kinks and fucking BDSM. And I'm like, this is way beyond like anything I'm like tuned in for. But like, yeah, but kicked off Hinge, Bumble, Tinder, all this stuff. Because I think at the end of the day, I'm still fucking 25. Mm. But that's the thing as well, I always struggle with, like, I don't want to like, there's always like people talk about things like a power imbalance of like someone being famous or whatever. And that, but I'm trying to like work that out as well. That's like a new thing of like, I don't want to like use my fame, or I don't want that to have any influence over someone who I'm dating. But then at the same time, it's obviously a big part of like...
And it's unavoidable.
Yeah. And it's like, I can't... What am I only supposed to date people who are also famous? Like, that's a really weird thing. So it is that thing of like, yeah, it is strange. I admit, like, being on Tinder is a bit weird. I'm the last girlfriend on Tinder. She's fucking great. So this is brilliant. Like, do you know what I mean? This is after I've been famous.
Is there a part of you that hopes they don't give a fuck about it and don't know who you are?
No, I think I'm like... Because, again, it's that way of like 20... Any girl from like... 22 to 25 is probably gonna know. Again, that's like sounds wanky, but just age range, like fucking
nowhere to hide.
Yeah, yes. Do you know what I mean? Exactly, yeah, nowhere to hide. I'm fucking famous. But I think I kind of want them to, if they know, there's nothing worse than a girl going, oh, I didn't even like realize, like, I hate that when you can like tell that someone's talking past. Sometimes it's a fucking totally thing, but sometimes when people like, it just does my nut, or when people like, I don't know if you've had this since like this all blown up, but like,
I've got a girlfriend, mate, so I don't.
No, totally, yeah, but when people come up to you, anybody comes up to you, and they love to let you know that they don't give a fuck who you are. It's like the most, I don't even know who you are, I don't give a fuck who you are, or whatever, blah, blah, and you're like, all right, like, feelings mutual, like, what the fuck is this? Like, you don't have to come up and tell me that you don't know who I am. It's fucking brutal. But, so like, and sometimes that happens in dating as well, where it's like, yeah, I don't even fucking care about like who you are or whatever. And it's just like, okay, this is like, you don't have to tell me that. Like, just like, we can just have a conversation as two human beings or whatever. But yeah, I think I would rather, if they did know who I was, that it was like, oh yeah, like, cool, like, your music's cool or whatever, blah, blah, blah. I probably wouldn't, if someone was like, for example, if I met a girl at a gig, now,
yeah,
I probably wouldn't. Maybe back like ages ago when I was playing smaller gigs, but like now it just feels a bit, that feels weird to me.
Yeah,
like, that's a very big thing. That feels like maybe taking advantage of your position. So I probably wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. Full stop. But I think, yeah, if someone was like into the music, that's great. If someone was like, oh, that's not really my thing, but cool. If someone hated it, absolutely fine as well. But I just think I just like people to be as upfront as possible, rather than be like, oh yeah, oh, are you that, oh, is that like your song, whatever, blah, 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 blah. But it's like,
You just want people to be genuine, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly. The most important thing.
Because if they're not, then there's trust question marks, right?
Yeah, of course. And I think that's again maybe a big thing of like the whole not giving too much of myself away and all the rest of it, like, and putting those walls up.
How is dating and relationships and all that in your life now? Because do you have trust issues that people are going for you for the wrong reasons? That's the question I get asked a lot. It's like, how do you, especially being like Dragon's Den and people know you for like money.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
People think that you're going to attract a certain type of person.
Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, totally. But there's this really good bit in The Trip with Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon where he goes, oh, well, she's only going out with you because you're famous. And then Steve Coogan goes, but I am famous. That's like me saying, she's only going out with you because you're good looking and young. Like, yeah, yeah, it's like, yeah, it's that thing of like, it is such a big part right now, at least right now in my life, of who I am, that it is hard to get away from. I think it's going to, listen, more, for some crazy coincidence, more girls are interested in me now than they were a couple of years
really?
Ago. I don't know what it is. But it's definitely changed.
They read about your net worth.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. But it's not to say like, and I don't, but like, it's a, like, again, it's that thing of like, see people feel like they know you and like all the rest of it and they've seen your personality and you maybe made them laugh or like whatever. That can be a
big attractive
thing. Yeah, yeah. And as well, you maybe have this air, people think you're confident because like, or at least with me, people think confident because of how I am on, like if I'm on a talk show or if I'm on, like my Instagram, whatever, people assume that I'm a lot more kind of confident. And if I've had a few beers, I'm going to be more chatty. And
are you confident? Anyway.
I wouldn't say so. Not really. Again, it's that thing of like feeling really open to like people. Like it's like that you're kind of put on display. Like I feel like I don't know. I just don't think I'm. Yeah, no, I wouldn't say I'm not as confident as I was when I was a kid, let's put it that way. I mean, I don't think anyone is, but like, some days I feel really outgoing and I'm like, oh, I'm really chatty. Some days I struggle to talk to my friends. Like, see, sometimes I'll just be like, there'll be a bunch of us around and we'll be having a laugh and then like three of them will leave and it'll just be me and one of the pal. And in my head, I'm like, fuck, what do you say to your friends again? Like, do you know what I mean? It's that way where you're just in your head and you get in my head and I'm a bit like, I can't think of anything to say. Do you know what I mean? So sometimes that happens. Like, there's been times where I've done interviews with people and I've been really chatty and outgoing because it's like, it's a set up thing. They're asking me questions. I don't necessarily need to ask them anything.
Mm.
And it's quite easy to just kind of lock into that rhythm. But where it's like, and maybe it might be part of doing interviews because a lot of the sort of interactions I have with people are very like one-sided of ask a question, I'll answer it, ask a question, I'll answer it. Whereas, and now I kind of sometimes I'm a bit, especially in a romantic setting, I'm a bit like, fuck, what do I say to this? Like, what do I say to this person? And it's something that, yeah, I need to get better at, obviously. But, and plus it's an interesting thing as well, because if someone knows what you do, it's like a job that they might start asking you questions.
And it becomes a bit of a, problem is it can become a bit of a Q&A and that's exhausting,
yeah,
isn't
it? Yeah, totally.
You don't want to be doing that on the fucking weekend.
No, totally. 100%. Like people asking like, oh, how's the gigs going, or how's like writing new music going, and you're like,
you're going to give the dead answers, which is just yes, good.
I totally.
And then they go, how's this? Yeah. Yes, good.
It's like, who cares? Like, let's not talk about this.
And you know, like, they don't really care.
Yeah, totally.
Isn't that the worst type of question? Yeah. When you know someone's asking a question and they don't really care.
Yeah, of course.
I absolutely despise small talk.
Yeah, totally.
As you can probably tell from this podcast.
Totally. Yeah, it's definitely. No talk has been small. I'll tell you that. Straight in.
Like, I find it exhausting. I think I'm an introvert.
Yeah, I totally agree. But then it's very, again, how often in the real world can you start a conversation with a really deep question?
Never.
Exactly. So it's like, in this situation, we got off to this fucking great start and it's like, to be fair, even before the podcast and stuff, it was like having a good chat that was about fucking proper and deep stuff. So it was like, but in real life, if you walk up to Sunday in Tesco's or whatever and go like, tell me about key points in your life. It's like, then we go like, what the fuck are you talking about? Just try to buy some bread. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's, it is thingy. But yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. It's like so refreshing to have these conversations and actually speak about these things because it's like, there's just no other situation where you can actually sit down and talk to this. Unless it's like your family or friends. But even then it's like, sometimes when you go to see your parents, you don't want to have fucking big deep chats with them. You just want to like be with your parents and enjoy being with your parents and like just sit and have dinner and just enjoy.
Be there.
Yeah, just be there rather than be like, oh,
explain your whole life.
Yeah, totally. Do you know what I mean? I think Yeah, so these situations that are very, I mean, we don't often have conversations just deep in front of cameras like this many cameras, but like I think it's always refreshing.
You now realise that there is, and I hate to fucking add more pressure, but you know, people are waiting now for this for new music at some point, whenever it's going to be coming. How are you feeling about that? How are you feeling?
Oh, I'm genuinely shit myself. Point to making this fucking new music where I was like, I don't actually fucking care about this. Am I just going for the motions and writing these songs and all this to it? And then there would be days where I'm like, fuck, I'm sweating on this. So now the album's done and every single song on it I fucking love and I think is a better album than the first one and I really care about it and I really put a lot of... I write about a lot more stuff that I would never have spoke about in the first album, like pertaining to my own mental health and like my own sort of outlook on things regarding being famous or whatever. And I think... like that, it's kind of like a nice thing to be scared, because I'm like, oh fuck, I really, really want this to go well because I really care about this album and I realise, oh, I really care about making this music and being able to put it out and having this privileged position to be able to fucking go and do that. But yeah, I'd be lying if I said I was anything other than absolutely fucking bricking it. It's like, it's a serious... and it's like, it's that thing as well, like I said earlier, where people are like, oh man, you can fucking shout, you can fart on the mic and it'll go to fucking top 10 or whatever. Just because the last album did well does not mean that at all. It's like fucking, it's nonsense. Like people want good music. If the music's shite, then it's not going to fly. Do you know what I mean?
But you've done the bit you can control.
Yes, 100%.
But is there not now a risk of putting your emotions on the uncontrollable? Like there's nothing now you can do. Mm-hmm. Once you've written music and you've done the hard bit, there's nothing more that you can do to control it. Obviously you can do promo and stuff, but that's not gonna, you know, that won't, that's not gonna be the thing that
pushes it over the edge. Yeah, no, totally. And it is that, it is like the fucking unknown and it is shit that I can't control and it is up to fucking, I don't know, a fucking higher power or fate or whatever, I don't know. But like, it's still quite hard to, it's one of those things where no amount of therapy I think is going to help me not focus on that.
Yeah.
And it is like, I'm quite bad for like having anticipation anxiety, being like, because I'm ready to fucking go now. Like I'm ready to go, like someone suggested that we push things back a bit the other day, a bit more. And I was like, I cannot wait like any longer to put this music out. This is like, this has to go out. And as well, if you wait too long, it's fucking, the album starts to mean less to you and you kind of like, you get further away from writing those songs and what they meant to you or whatever. So,
can I ask you a question though?
Yes.
If it goes really well, so if it goes bad, I kind of can guess how you probably might feel.
Yeah.
But if it goes really well, how will you feel?
I don't know. This is like, I'm kind of worried that if it goes bad, I'll be relieved because I'll be like, oh, thank fuck that all that pressure's off. Do you know what I mean? Like part of me kind of feels like that. And then part of me feels like, oh no, if it goes well, I'll be relieved. But then sometimes I'm like, oh, but if it goes well, I'll be like, fuck, I've got all this other stuff. Like, do you know what I mean? There's only like, if it goes well, surely that just means more prying eyes and more like fame and more like thing, which again is fucking great a lot of the time, but it has its pitfalls. And it's like, will that then feed into the anxiety more? Or is this my anxiety now? I've learned to deal with it, or will it get worse, or will it expand, or will it show itself in different ways? Or
what would you say to a friend if they were going through thinking all the things you're thinking? What would you say if I was your best mate, we'd known each other since we were kids, and I was saying all this stuff to you, what would you say to me?
I don't know. I'd say just like, remember why you got into it in the first place. Remember why you're doing it. Don't feel like you're working towards some end product. Feel like you're in it. This is the end product. You're enjoying it. This is what you're supposed to be doing. You're here. Fucking be here. Don't fucking, you're not, there's no fucking, it's not a destination, like this is pure like on a fucking card, but like there's no destination that you're trying to get to, but like just fucking like, this is the fun part. Like this is supposed to be fun. Let it be fun. Do you know what I mean? Because I think the only thing that's stopping it from being fun is fucking my mind. Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, it's easier to say that to people than to say this.
Yeah, it is, you're right. But they say, I mean, I've read the quote, I've posted this a few times myself, where they say, you know, if you always go through life believing happiness is somewhere else, then it will never be where you are.
Totally.
And it's like deferring the happiness to a future moment. But it's like a mirage. You see it in like when people are in those like movies in the desert and they see, I don't know, you're like chasing a rainbow and it just keeps moving off further into the future.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Totally. And I think that's the thing as well. I haven't done all this mad shit and then been to like... the Grammys. Fucking hated the Grammys. Fucking been to a bunch of other award shows that I didn't really enjoy. The award show that I loved the most was the Brit Awards the night that I had won two awards. Not because I won the awards, but because it was like the first time I ever felt like, oh fuck, we're celebrating this. My mum and dad were there, three of my best pals from home were like, well, able to come down and do it. The people who'd worked on the record were actually sitting at the table with me. We were like label-wise and manager-wise and that. We're like, that felt like an amazing moment. And then you realise it's because there was all these people there. It wasn't like because... I'm there and I've won something or whatever. It's because you're celebrating this with like people that you love and people that you that have been through it all with you and have my mum and dad, obviously. My mum gave birth to me, by the way. I don't know if
that's... Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, so like my mum and dad and then my friends who I've grown up with and then these people who have put their fucking blood, sweat and tears into making the record with me and then like the label and stuff who've fucking worked so hard and promoting it and getting out there. And I think that's... That was what, like, what you realise is, like, I mean, again, it's, like, so fucking, like, cliche or whatever, but that is, like, you were, like, fuck, this is genuinely why it's fun. Like, because you're getting to share this moment with all these other people when it's not anything to do with, like you say, getting to a point. Like, getting to the Brits and winning a Brit was very... I was having a fucking great night that night regardless. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was nothing that was going to, like...
Either way.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? If I'd lost, I wouldn't have been like, ah, fuck, I lost. Nice round, I'm going home. It would have been like, all right, cool, let's fucking kick on. It just so happened that I won these two things that I had to carry about me for the rest of the night. Do you know what I mean? If anything, it was a hindrance.
No, it was a good part of
No, but then like, and then going to the Grammys. I remember Grammys, start to finish, had a panic attack the whole time. It was fucking dreadful. Hated every moment of it. And when we didn't win, I remember feeling like, oh, thank God. And like, it just kind of like, melted away because it was like, thank fuck, I don't need to go and do that shit. I don't know if it maybe was like, fuck, this is good. I don't know if maybe in my head I'm like, oh fuck, if we were to win something like that, that's like more and more eyes on you that maybe you can't handle at this moment in time. I don't know if it was like my body like telling me something, but I fucking hated the Grammys. Pish. Like all these things were like, and at that time it was just me, my manager, and like the guys who I wrote So I Mean Love with. Like, I think when you can see the people, I mean, I love them to bits, but, and when you can see like the people you're like, who have kind of made you who you are, as it were, enjoying the things that you're enjoying and seeing it unfold and stuff, I think that's the buzz.
So yeah. How do you take that with you going forward?
Well, hopefully the record does well enough next time that I can ask for more tickets to things. Do you know what I mean? That's honestly like, but I think that's like, like, it's just keeping those people close. And, like, that's another thing about COVID and going back to, like, I lived with my parents. I didn't have a flat or whatever. I lived with my parents because I was on tour all the time. I never needed a house. So I moved out during COVID and stuff. And it's, like, that realising, like, no matter what, however things go, no matter where you go, no matter what happens in your career or fucking, it's, like, it's always just going to come back to that and those people and those... And like, aye, where your roots are and stuff. I don't think it's just, for me, that's, it kind of reaffirms the importance of all that stuff, COVID, like being there and being back. And yeah, I think that was for me, that COVID for me, that was kind of what I got out of it. And I think for me, it's just then taking that forward and try at any time I can share moments like that with people, even if it means that I was doing an award show in America, flying some people out and doing it. And it's like, fucking, it's like not worrying about like, oh fuck, it's quite expensive to fly. Fuck it, fly them out, because it's like, it's going to make the moment. Yeah, it's going to make, exactly, yeah. It's going to make it fucking what it is, and it's going to fucking, that's so interesting. Yeah.
Do you have any goals looking really into the future? Do you have any of those big bucket list style goals where you go, fucking hell, that would be?
I'd like to write a song for a film.
Okay.
That's kind of my only
James
thing.
Bond or something like that.
Maybe not. I don't know if I would. If that's the, if me. Yeah. I don't know if I'm suave enough to have that sort of like thingy. But I don't know, man. Like anything would be good. But even if it's like, I don't know, some like indie film or whatever. It doesn't have to be fucking thing. I just like, I quite like the idea of that's like a new challenge. Like writing for. I wrote for a game once. And that was quite fun. I enjoyed that.
Do you reckon you could do it for a podcast?
Yeah, fucking sure. Yeah. I like it. Like, come on, battle on the boys. That's
I've
it.
Seen your
yeah.
net worth. I know you're not cheap.
Yeah. No, but yeah, so that, for me, that's kind of, I don't really have any, like, in terms of, like, chart positions or anything like that. Again, I never really had that the first time around. And I think it's only, you're only going to be disappointed in situations like that. I think maybe, yeah, I don't really know. I just kind of, again, it's meant to be fun. And I think me putting goals on things, the way my mind works, would kind of strip that of some of the fun of it. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, the film thing would be good. And I hope the people who really, really loved the first album, really, really love the second album. It doesn't have to be more like more people, but the people who like really, really carry the album with them and still are fucking like still fucking are connected to it and are still fucking playing it over and over again. I hope that they love the second record, and I hope that I did that in their eyes did it justice, because in mine I have.
What about personal goals? So like when I look at my personal life, I go, okay, there's a certain balance and structure to my personal life that I hope to achieve someday. Mm-hmm.
Totally. I think I still need to learn how to say no to things. I think I've cancelled shows before and all the rest of it, but I'm quite bad at like, oh fuck, if I say no to that, that's an opportunity that just won't come back or whatever. I need to learn, I'd like to be able to do that just for my own sort of personal life. I'd like to do some travelling that isn't relating to work at some point. I guess that's like taking time for myself out of like, that was kind of the plan over COVID, like, well, what became COVID, that I was going to go away and see all these places and actually just take some time. So I'd like to do that.
Kids, relationships?
I don't know. I mean, a relationship would obviously be nice. Not something I'm seeking at the moment.
Why are you on all these apps then, just for BDSM?
Yeah, just for BDSM, just for my kink shit. Yeah. Just for my my kinks. But I don't know. I think it's still nice to have, like, I like meeting new people and hanging out with new people and, shagging and that, I guess. But but I don't really have, like, if a relationship came up with the right person, fucking, if I met the right person, yeah, bang on, like, I'd be buzzed. But like, just, I think right now as well, it's a bit unfair for the other person if I'm fucking constantly away and all the rest of it. They have to be quite an understanding human being. Kids, I think that's fucking, right now it's not on my plans at all.
Yeah, but you're so fucking young.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I'm 25, so it's like, so I see my friends having, some of my friends, one of my pals have got 4 kids, Matt's same age as me, and it's like, or 3 kids maybe, I don't know, but I don't know speak to him that much anymore. He became a dad and I didn't want anything to him. That just reminds me of how, like, I'm getting older. But yeah, no, like, people I know getting married and having kids and that, that's just like not my bag at all. And again, I don't have anything wrong with that, people like doing their thing.
I suspect you'll meet someone. That's what happened with me, where I was very much the type of person where I was like, it's not fair on them, I'm too busy, my work comes first, blah, 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 blah. And then I met someone. I've seen this a lot, with especially with some musicians that were like rock stars, like proper, like, you know, rock stars, drugs. Oh, yeah. And then they meet someone and they just...
Slip, yeah. Because a lot of things going out and doing stuff like that is boredom.
Yeah.
That is a lot, like, don't get me wrong, I love a fucking night out. Mm. A lot of times you're like, you'll be sitting about Thursday night, Tuesday fucking night or something, and you've got nothing on Wednesday, and you're like, fuck, this is boring. Shall we just go get a few pints? And then you end up out and you're fucking unimagined. Yeah. So it's like, I can totally see that, like that switch. So
well, it's nice because you're being young.
Yeah, totally. 100%. And I think that's a big thing as well. It's like remembering that I'm in my 20s is a big thing for me, because sometimes I'm a bit like, fuck, let's just get this done and, like, don't, not giving a fuck and like missing birthdays and fucking weddings and all this shit, funerals. But I think it's something that's important to remember my age and like shit like that, like to actually take time for life rather than just slaving away at work.
We have a closing tradition on this podcast where the previous guest asks a question to the next guest. You might have seen it before. The previous guest asked you a question, but I'm actually going to ask a follow-up question to this as well. The question they left for you was, not knowing who they left it for, was kind of an interesting question that they left it for you, but would you rather win the Premier League, win an Oscar, or headline Glastonbury?
I mean, I think... that's quite, do you know what, actually? See, I do think there's something unreal about, like, see, being a... See, scoring, like...
A great goal.
Like, a great goal.
Should do Soccer Aid.
Yeah, oh, fuck me, I'm shite at football. But I'll be like a manager, I'll stand on the sidelines, like a class. But, like, the sound of it that I've always thought, fuck, that'd be the best feeling ever. Like, but I'm a Celtic fan, so, like, Old Firm Derby, like, scoring, like, a fucking, the winning goal, 90th minute, fucking whatever. Like, that must be unreal. But obviously, just because I'm a musician. I mean, headlining Glastonbury would be pretty fucking
so
great.
I'm gonna. So I kind of, that's why I knew it would be a bit of an easier question for you. Yeah. So I'm going to ask a question which we mentioned earlier on, which was caused a bit of a eureka moment in your life, which is, how are you doing?
I'm good, I think. I'm definitely not, I think over the last 2-3 weeks, I've really come back to like being myself. I think I was maybe in a bit of a, not like a rut, but like a funny patch of the few weeks prior. I think I was maybe going out a bit too much. Kind of feeling a bit dejected because we're just like this, as I was saying, about this long run up to releasing this first single. Maybe feeling a bit dejected about that and stuff. And just overall, just anxiety, just like really fucking getting the better of me. But I think over the last like couple of weeks, I've kind of coming at the other end of it. So I feel pretty good. I feel quite optimistic, cautiously optimistic. But yeah, it's still there. Anxiety's always there, but I think, yeah, I'm happy at the minute, which is good. That's most I can ask for. Operating at 80% is fucking class.
Right. I can see the caution in the words, which is yeah, which is telling. But do you know what? I couldn't be more... Like, I don't sit here and gas people up or really bullshit them because I don't really have to. You can say other things. Mm-hmm. I genuinely love your music.
Oh, thank you so much.
And I really, really mean that. Like, mm-hmm. I genuinely, sincerely mean that. I've watched your acoustic tracks on YouTube, your covers mm-hmm. on YouTube of your own songs.
Yeah, totally.
I've watched all of it. And I couldn't be more excited to hear whatever you do next. Oh. And I'm not even as a fan of yours, I'm not even anticipating it's going to be the same as last time. I'm actually just so intrigued to hear another Lewis. And when I say another Lewis, I just mean more Lewis.
Totally, yeah.
More from you because, you know, your album was actually quite, I think because you have so many hits on there, it can feel a little bit short in hindsight.
Yeah, totally.
I've played the song so many times. So I'm so excited for that. And I also want to thank you generally because it's so refreshing for someone to be so unbelievably open and honest with some of the issues you talk about, because you won't know until, you know, after this conversation comes out how many people you help by doing that.
Oh,
like when Jack came on and talked about his health anxiety, Jack said online he got thousands of messages a day of people thanking him because there's not enough people talking about it. What's the incentive to do so? Mm-hmm. There is an incentive, but it doesn't appear to be one. It seems to be a greater cost. Mm-hmm, so thank you for that, because we need to have more of those conversations, and especially about therapy and being a man and being open about your feelings. And thank you for doing this. It's a huge honour.
No, mate, honestly, thank you so much for having me on. It's honestly so refreshing to actually have a fucking full-on conversation, in-depth conversation about stuff, because no one has ever asked me the questions that you've asked me today. So it's good to actually talk. I feel lighter.
Great. You are always one decision away from taking your business to the next level. And a decision that's helped me to transform my business is moving over to NetSuite, who I'm excited to say are a sponsor of this podcast. If you don't know already, NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. It's reduced IT costs because it lives in the cloud, so you can access it from anywhere. And the cost of managing and running multiple systems because it's in one unified business management suite. My team and I don't have to worry about tasks being manual and clunky, and it means that I can be more efficient and to focus on more important things like bringing you the best episodes and guests on this show. So I become one of the 37,000 companies that have already made the move over to NetSuite. NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks, so head to netsuite.com/Bartlett for a free product tour. Back to the episode.